Today I talked to Dave Rappaport. He's the Global Social Mission Officer over at Ben & Jerry's, the maker of love, peace, and ice cream, as their tagline says. Dave explains to us why and how social activism is the whole point of Ben & Jerry's, how it makes the brand different, unmistakable, and how that relates to its euphoric concoctions and community, as he puts it. Dave also comments on what feels like an increasingly crowded and competitive field of cause marketing and purpose-driven brands, noting that few brands stood up to be counted when Ben & Jerry's felt it was time, once more, to show your true colors in the context of recent political events. Enjoy.
Please listen carefully.
All right. Hello and welcome everyone to this new episode of the Uber Brands podcast, the podcast in which we discuss brands that are desired beyond price, performance, and sometimes even reason. Brands that seduce rather than sell, that add some myth to the material and shine from the inside out. We call them Uber Brands, and we, that is your host, JP Kuhlwein. And today I'm particularly excited to welcome Dave Rappaport, who is the Global Social Mission Officer at Ben & Jerry's, a brand we've already written and talked a lot about. So it's great to have you here. Thanks for volunteering, Dave.
Sure thing. It's a pleasure to be able to speak with you.
You work at a wonderful brand, and you've got a very interesting, yet not surprising for Ben & Jerry's title, which is Global Social Mission Officer. Can you tell us a little bit more, what do you actually do?
Well, sure. So the social mission is part of Ben & Jerry's three-part mission, which includes a product mission and an economic mission, which goes along with the social mission. And the three together work to propel our company to create linked prosperity, really, which is a way of saying that everybody that we touch, we want to benefit from our those involved in our supply chain, to our employees, to the world that we impact, and certainly our fans.
Now, it's yet, I think, an unusual position, though, compared to other companies. Why does Ben & Jerry's break this out and have a separate position for this? Why would it not be integrated in something like marketing or in all the functions you mentioned, like product development, finance, and so on?
Sure. Well, you know, certainly we need the social mission to be carried and executed by everybody across the brand. And so there are probably lots of other ways to organize it. But just like we have somebody who's in charge of ensuring that our finances are in order, you know, it makes sense to have a group of folks who are propelling the social mission and facilitating the engagement of all of our stakeholders in it. Our department is global. We have country-based social mission managers in many of the countries that we sell in. We have a core here in our headquarters office in Vermont that works across the range of efforts that are involved. And, you know, it does encompass what's traditionally, I think, called sustainability in a lot of companies, but it also includes the activism that really has distinguished Ben & Jerry's over the years. So I like to talk about our work as being divided into ensuring that the impact we have as a business and through our value chain is consistent with our values, and then to use our influence as a business to try to create systemic change in the world. So it's that impact and influence that we really do. And so on the impact side, we are trying to drive social equity inside our company. We call it our values-led sourcing program throughout our supply chain, things like our Caring Dairy program with our largest ingredient, cream in our ice cream, and many other programs, as well as reducing our carbon footprint through things like an internal tax on carbon that we fund initiatives with. On the influence side, we're working on activism campaigns in Europe on refugee and asylum rights, LGBTQ issues in various parts of the world, climate change, where there are toeholds to make a difference there. And here in the North America, we're focused on social equity, currently really driving toward criminal justice reform. And we do that work nationally and then in a few local areas as well.
So you've got a full plate. You're talking about creating prosperity. You're talking about stakeholders. In the average company, people would think about their owners, which in your case are ultimately Unilever and the shareholders of Unilever. Would you describe the social mission as a special cost that Ben & Jerry's has, unlike other food brands or brands in general in the packaged goods industry? Or would you consider it a investment, a marketing investment? Like you say, we're known for our activism. Or do you have a different way of looking at the cost that's certainly associated, not only monetary, but also effort and reputational associated with what you do?
Well, it's part of the value that we create, but its origin is not at all as a marketing effort or a way to distinguish the brand. Ben & Jerry wanted their business to reflect their values, and they wanted to do things that made the world a better place. And so it's just inherent in the whole purpose of the business. There wouldn't be any point to the business if it weren't trying to create the good that we strive to do through the social mission from the beginning. Now, having said that, I think we do know that it does create brand value in what's conventionally a marketing sense. But I think the secret sauce is that you wouldn't be able to do that if for a minute you were doing it with that intention. It's a byproduct of trying to use business as a force for good.
So you're saying there would be no point in your business if it wasn't for the activism. Shouldn't the point be that you make delicious ice cream that people make? I haven't heard you talk a lot about ice cream. Where does that aspect of your brand come in, the product?
Well, certainly that's foundational. And you're talking to the social mission guy, and so
right.
I'm focused on those other things. But absolutely, you know, the business is based on making these euphoric concoctions and, spreading joy in the world in that way. And all those things kind of work together.
Do you sometimes find yourself in conflict or at least debate with some of the people, let's say, working on ice cream flavors, working on finances, I guess, in particular, or maybe even in PR, if that's a separate function?
Well, you know, every business is constantly trying to balance a whole host of factors, right? And take the social mission out of it. You know, if you're developing a product, you're always trying to balance the quality and efficacy of the product, whatever goals you may have for finances and all the rest to, end up with a business that, creates the most optimal combination of those things. And so when you throw social mission into it, it's no different. You're always having to, to make choices and do balancing. And so I think that the way our business operates really isn't fundamentally any different than the way most businesses operate. We just recognize that we have an obligation to a wider range of stakeholders than just the shareholders in Unilever. And that's actually formalized through the acquisition agreement when Unilever purchased Ben & Jerry's about 19 years ago. Where a social mission board was created that is in place to assure that the social mission and the brand integrity is maintained, and Unilever is obligated to ensure that the effectiveness of our social mission grows at least as fast as the business grows.
And I guess that's a strong backing for you compared to, let's say, profitability or money arguments that other companies actually might have a harder time that don't have this in their charter and kind of signed off as a contract. You can refer back to that agreement.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a unique thing, and it does allow us or has allowed us to move forward in ways that perhaps other brands haven't been able to. But, you know, it's not a contentious thing either. We feel like we're obligated to prove that this is a viable business model that works. And we have grown and grown in profitability over the years. And so, we take great pride succeeding as a business while we're succeeding in doing good as a business. And certainly that's the approach that Unilever takes. We have felt, in recent years very supported by them in that.
So it's been an incredible run, certainly. On the other hand, it feels like almost every brand now has a higher purpose these days. You have everyone jumping onto Me Too, LGBTQ, saving the world in one way or another, being organic, fair trading, and so on. Is that competition for you, competition for being in the limelight, competition for having a unique hold on causes, or on the contrary, does it help you because purpose is so much front and center for everyone right now?
Well, to the extent that other businesses are genuinely adopting real purposes in one way or another to use business as a force for good, it's an extremely positive thing. It's, you know, Ben & Jerry's early on was one of the founders of Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility and other sort of organizations that have propelled this movement. We were one of the early members, B Corp, and many other groupings, and so we think that's a great thing. But I think it's also important to point out that, you know, simply deciding to make a statement or take out an ad, sort of tagging along with Me Too or some other cause that's in the news, is not necessarily a real purpose. And so, you know, we think, well, it's good that people, other companies may be throwing some measure of weight behind some of these movements. You know, real purpose is actually something that is heartfelt and independent of whatever business opportunity may be associated with it, but actually striving to use your influence to make a positive change.
Now, that makes sense to me. It seems, however, when you look at some of the numbers, whether it's shares or whether it's likes on social media, that some of these more, what might be considered more tactical moves, you know, handing out free food during the shutdown or, you know, sending batteries to a hurricane area, despite maybe being one-off, they seem to get a lot of attention, a lot of liking, create equity. Does that frustrate you, somebody who's been in this business for, you know, decades and is working hard on, like you say, putting influence to action and activism, that these tactical moves seem to do the job as well? Or how do you look at that?
You know, I'm not really focused on, you know, how brands are you know, generating sales for themselves. You know, what we're focused on here is things like last fall, what could we do more to help the passage of the ballot measure in Florida that restored voting rights to convicted felons? We're trying to figure out how in the United Kingdom we can get new policies that allow refugees to work while they're waiting for their status to be clarified rather than sitting on their hands.
Right.
You know, it's the things that we're working on that drive us, and, you know, we're glad that they end up being a benefit to our business, and we know that it does drive loyalty to the business. But again, the minute we do these things for that purpose, it's going to lose its magic as far as anything that it's doing to build the brand.
Let's turn to the consumer, or rather the people, I prefer to say. A frustration with quite a few purpose-driven brands that I've talked to is that so many people utterly ignore what they're all about and just buy them for the nice color of the sweater, or maybe in your case, because, you know, they love cherry ice cream and they have no idea what you're doing. I guess twofold question. One is, does that sometimes frustrate you that not everyone is participating? Or on the other hand, is it good that you only have a small core of consumers who are really rooting for you on the social causes? Because if everyone knew, you might lose some volume, because not everyone might politically, from an ideology point of view, agree with you. How do you look at that?
Certainly, you know, we know that actually it is only a minority of our fans that really are familiar with our social mission. And we're really glad that, you know, people like our ice cream, and we really strive hard to keep creating new flavors and offerings that delight them in that way. You know, we love our fans, you know, who love us for whatever the reason. We also think that we could do better in helping all of our fans to understand what our social mission is about and offering them ways to engage. And I think we're continually striving to create more visibility and awareness and engagement on those levels. We know that the participation in the social mission, the engagement with it, does drive loyalty. We're not concerned that you know, some fans may be turned off. You know, it's much more important to have people who passionately love you and we feel that the more fans know about the social mission, the more they're going to love us. And if some don't, that's okay. If they love our ice cream, that's great. But we're not concerned with driving anybody away.
Gotcha. Do you have a clear picture of who these super fans are? Like at Patagonia, they talk about the dirt bags. You know, at Harley Davidson, you immediately think of these outlaws with a beard and so on and so on. Do you have a clear picture, maybe even that you use as a guide or as a community you consult with first, that are the Ben & Jerry's community?
Well, there's really a lot of them. I think we haven't got one label. We've had doughheads for chocolate chip cookie dough and chunk spelunkers for the folks who like to dig out all the cookies and candies and nuts, that are in our ice cream flavors. We actually literally have written on the walls here as one of our goals is to love our fans more than they love us, and so we strive to embrace that every day. And we don't think we're perfect, but we do believe that our fans are at the center of what we do, and we try to take care of these super fans with all kinds of surprise and delight activities and flavors, and our consumer outreach does a lot of things there. We do a lot with social media events. Probably the biggest thing we do, of course, is Free Cone Day every year,
right,
which is a lot of fun.
Right, right. And you do the AmeriCone with Stephen Colbert, and in fact, one thing that I keep mentioning and showing in my classes is that you put on the front page of your website that Ben and Jerry's got arrested in Washington, and I keep telling the students, it's rather unusual for a company to be proud about their founders getting arrested, right? Your business and your equity must be driven quite a bit by word of mouth, but here again, it feels like word of mouth is getting awfully crowded these days. It seems everyone has, quote unquote, discovered word of mouth and social media as being great ways to advertise. Do you increasingly feel that pressure? Do you need to invent new things to stand out on that front as well? Word of mouth, events, social media? Or has nothing really much changed in the last 10 years as far as that is concerned?
Well, I think that we are always developing new ways to reach out as social media evolves. And we're lucky to have some really smart, fun people who sort of lead those efforts. So I'm not, as knowledgeable about that as a lot of other people are in the company. But, to me, I think what we're seeing is an evolution in our fans. And I think you see this demographically with Gen Z particularly. People have just ever higher, more highly sensitive BS meters, right? And so I think the thing to keep striving for and being sure that we do well is to be authentic. And I think that if we do that well, that allows us to stand out because people know that we're being genuine, and I think that they're going to continue to respond to that.
Authenticity and being genuine is a big, big subject. I often tell folks that is kind of where the rubber hits the road, particularly in terms of long-term equity and gaining a reputation. Do you have an example in mind where you are proud to say, this is an action where Ben and Jerry shows its true DNA and where probably other companies would not follow, and it's truly authentically Ben and Jerry's?
Well, I think there have been, of course, many, many examples over the years. But in the past year, just before the elections in late October, we released a flavor, Pecan Resist, which was intended to support organizations that had been leading the resistance against all of the things that the Trump administration has been doing to undermine the things that we value in the environment, in social equity, with immigration, driving division and hate in our society. And this was a limited batch flavor that featured a pint designed by Fabiano Rodriguez, who is a movement artist based in the San Francisco Bay Area, featuring very artwork very different than anything you'd seen previously on Ben & Jerry's pints, with people of color prominently represented on the label, the word resist prominent there. So that's certainly something where we showed what we care about and that activism that we want to inspire. And, you know, unfortunately, very few brands have been willing to stand up and be counted in the face of what is an unprecedented undermining of American values.
That's very strong action. Now, many people would argue that, is that really the role of companies? Shouldn't that be the role of politicians that we elect, whose primary job this should be, to fight for social justice, to fight for healthcare, to fight for protection of the environment, etc., etc., rather than companies and commercial interests?
So would folks who articulate that point of view be suggesting that the hands-down most powerful forces in society should not play a role? Are they suggesting that, you know, when you go to work in the morning, the thing that you devote your most of your day and your energy to should be devoid of your values, and that the only time in your life that you spend to try to make the world a better place and to express your values is in the margins, in those moments when you're rushing off to work, or when you're exhausted coming back from work, or on weekends when you're trying to spend time with your family? I think we totally reject that. You know, businesses have a responsibility to be productive contributors to society across the board. And I'd suggest that it's been their absence in taking that responsibility that has created many of the concerns that we're now facing.
Mm. So you must be accepting then also that there are, let's say, more conservative businesses that would invest into communication on the other end of the spectrum.
Sure, I think that engagement in what you believe in as long as you are genuinely trying to use your business as a force for good, there's room for disagreement on you know what that is. But I think we'll make the world a much better place if we're actually using all of our efforts to strive to make to address injustice and inequity and to fight climate change and, you know, all of the other issues that are out there.
Right. Okay. That makes sense. Let us turn to maybe an internal potential tension, at least the way I see it, which is Ben & Jerry's is part of Unilever. We've talked about that for a while already, and it upset some people at the beginning, as we know. There was talk about selling out and so on and so on. I think that has calmed down. But I just wonder, you know, how do you operate within this Unilever environment? You have within Unilever now purpose being quite the subject. You've got Dove with Real Beauty and, you know, many other initiatives within Unilever, not necessarily along the same causes as Ben & Jerry's, but purpose driven. On the other hand, this is still a big mother corp. How do you manage your relationship with Unilever? What kind of interaction do you have? Is there any coordination, or are you like a totally independent subsidiary that surprises Unilever management of what you're doing?
Well, because of the unique position we have by virtue of that acquisition agreement, we do have the opportunity to act independently. It really is not an adversarial relationship in any way. Unilever, as a corporation, is really behind Ben & Jerry's and what we're doing. And you have all the normal tensions you have in any business, as we were discussing earlier, around you know, meeting profit margins and, you know, efforts to achieve efficiencies and so forth, which can potentially, at least in the short run, conflict with where we want to invest. But, you know, those are just the same kinds of issues that any company or any brand or subsidiary is working out. We have a lot of interaction with the Sustainable Living Plan folks in Unilever. You know, they are all of Unilever's brands are striving to find and really get to work on genuine purpose. And I think they look to us as, you know, perhaps an inspiration. And we try to help propel those efforts in any way that we can. So it's a you know, whatever tensions we have are just the same kinds of tensions that exist in any business. So again, I think it's critical that we are successful as a business in order to be the kind of example we'd like to be in the world. And And so we don't have any fundamental conflict with the idea of increasing our profit margin or brand growth and so forth. You know, we're just kind of in the same boat as the rest of Unilever's brands in that respect.
We often talk about the concept of ring fencing, that many of these brands that are part of bigger corporations that not necessarily fully align on everything they're doing have succeeded in ring fencing or protecting certain parts of their DNA. That could be the organization, that could be the way they manufacture things. Do you have such a fence around Ben & Jerry's sometimes, where you clearly see, well, those are areas where we don't allow Unilever to touch us, even if they want to?
Yeah. I mean, certainly, you know, we have that ability with the authority the board has to protect the brand integrity and the social mission.
And there's money attached to that, right? There's a budget attached to that. Is that correct?
Not quite. There are some obligations for philanthropy, for maintaining certain levels of philanthropy, which have been maintained after the acquisition. But the what's really attached is results and being able to demonstrate that we're increasing the what we're achieving in the social mission at a rate faster than the growth of the business as a whole. What I was going to say is that there's not, an active sort of conflict or tension between our board and Unilever. There's just an ongoing conversation. And as things come up that we feel we need to do to propel the social mission that may rankle, you know, some at Unilever, it's understood that we can just go ahead and do it.
Gotcha. Now, I'm pretty sure that one of the subjects that would have been talked about between the boards is Halo Top as a brand, I think now not only in the US, but also in the UK and beyond, literally exploded into the scene and taken very significant share in the premium ice cream market where you're operating. And it seems like on a pretty straightforward product message of you can eat a ton of me and you won't get fat. That's not how they say it, but you could interpret it that way. Or say indulge without consequences. Does that hurt, like literally emotionally hurt, that somebody with such a straightforward just product message can have such tremendous success in such a short time? And what are you going to do about it?
Well, you know, they certainly made a big splash when they entered the market, but you may want to double check to see its, you know, current status as a big winner at this stage. What you're describing is certainly not a purpose, right? It's really a value proposition. And we know that, there are folks who want to have an indulgent, satisfying ice cream experience with less fat and fewer calories. And we have a Mooforia line that provides that opportunity for our fans. You know, that's just the competition of the marketplace. And, we feel fine about our position and, how all that's going to shake out over time.
So you think this is a rather short-term product challenge than a longer-term market leadership challenge?
You know, there are probably other folks who are more qualified than I am, but, we certainly, you know, there's always competitive pressures to deal with and respond to, but we feel really good about where we are and our opportunity to continue to grow our market share.
So let me ask you last question, and please answer as the social mission officer. You know, what would be nirvana for you? You know, you say we're going to be successful. When would you declare success, or is there ever going to be a moment like that when you say we really achieved what we're trying to do?
Well, I think that there's always going to be room and an obligation and responsibility to try to make the world a more just place. We've particularly focused on justice for historically marginalized communities, for environmental justice around climate change, related issues, promoting human dignity and environmental restoration. I think you'd have to envision a future much further down the road than the next decade to say let's retire and work on something else. But certainly nirvana is being able to really effectively engage our fans in all of the different kinds of things that they can do to contribute to these causes, this sort of responsibility we all have to make the world more just. Maybe I'd say beyond that, to be coming together and having fun doing it, the special stuff that we can do that because we sell ice cream and we're really about fun and indulgence. There's a way that we can work together and bring folks together that a lot of other voices don't have. So, we just want to find more effective ways to do that.
Sounds like a valid cause to me. Dave, thanks a lot for your time. If listeners are really interested to dig deeper into what you're doing from a social mission perspective in particular, maybe even participate, what are great sources for them to connect? Where should they go?
Well, go to benandjerry.com and you can certainly check out many blog posts that discuss the specifics of the issues that we're engaged in and the sort of journey that we're on with things like social equity. Check us out on Instagram and Facebook, and I think you'll find an abundance of material out there.
Excellent. Thanks again, Dave, for being on the podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I enjoyed it.
And your dear listener, you can always reach us at info@uberbrands.com, and that's spelled with a U and a E as it should be. If you like this podcast, don't be shy, tell your friends about it, subscribe and so on, and we'll hear of each other very soon again, I hope. Thanks again, Dave. It was great to have you.
Likewise.